Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
Every goal, every game, everywhere. The Times and the Sunday Times. Now with goals.
Thank you for downloading and choosing to spend the next 35 minutes or so with us. I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and in the studio this week, we're joined by Allison Rudd and, making his first appearance of the season, Matt Hughes. Plus, down the line from an undisclosed location in West London, it's Matt Dickinson.
Leighton Baines. Here's Bezic, who's just come on as a sub. Goodness me, what was he doing? John Obi Mikel Costa, who scored in the first minute, scores in the 90th. Three-goal winning margin for Chelsea. What a day they've had on Merseyside.
All right, let's get started, and let's get started at Goodison Park. Everton 3, Chelsea 6, 9 goals in a game. Dicko, as purists and snobs, inevitably I have to ask the question, when two teams concede 9 goals, and two teams that are generally relatively well-organized defensively, I have to ask, is this a good game, or is this a game with a lot of screw-ups?
Well, it's a game with a lot of screw-ups, but that's made it a great game, hasn't it? I mean, Chelsea will not concede 3 to many teams, but let's revel in the fact that on one afternoon they did. They made a few individual mistakes that, you know, Mourinho, as we know, will take them back to the training ground and drill them again. But no, let's glory in this one, not get too sniffy.
Okay, Allison, Dicko can glory because he's not an Everton fan and he's not a Chelsea fan. But do you think Roberto Martinez and Mourinho are glorying in this right now?
Oh well, Martinez definitely isn't, is he? I mean, from Everton's point of view, Martinez wants an attacking team, and they're at home, and they go 2 goals behind. What do you think's going to happen? There's going to be holes left in their defence. I kind of don't see how that could have turned out any other way, given that Chelsea are top notch at the moment, putting away chances. So, but Martinez is an upbeat guy. I think he will know that's exactly what happened. They sort of ran away with themselves a bit. Also, for some reason, he doesn't seem to think that there's anything wrong with his defence, because his defence was really good last season. But it's looking, there were 3 men creaking at the back for them, and maybe that will never happen again. Maybe it was just the stars aligned that way. But in goal, Howard didn't look like the player he was even at the World Cup, and Jagielka and Distan, who are two of the most historically composed and elegant defenders in the league, looked a bit old.
Well, they are a bit old, and that's what we found out so far this season. Everton seem to have a problem with their centre backs. Jagielka, as much as he is a very admirable professional and a top bloke, he's not a sort of Champions League international quality centre back, in my view, and that's what was exposed on Saturday. Chelsea, Mourinho will be delighted with the speed of which Costa's settled in and made such a huge impact. Also Fabregas, he can pick holes, and I'm sure he won't be happy with elements of their defending, but on balance they've won every game, scored a lot of goals, so he's going to be delighted.
At least Everton have got somewhere to look. I mean, I think Stones has obviously got, still raw, but undoubtedly got potential. And Alcaraz, to be honest, I mean, I think he you can see that Jagielka is sort of a leader of that squad, and he's been picked partly because for captaincy and for the solidity that he brings as a personality. But maybe it's time to take a big decision and wonder whether that's enough if he's not playing well enough. And I mean, I've always actually liked Alcaraz, so I think at least when he looks to the bench, Martinez does have options.
Well, it's funny because you just looking at the other defense, Chelsea's defense, when we talk about options in central defense, it just occurred to me. Obviously, Ivanovic is playing right back right now. The guy can presumably almost play just about anywhere and has played almost anywhere. When Felipe Luis is fit, you presume Felipe Luis goes to left back, Azpilicueta to right back, and then Brano can be your third center half. But is there concern that sort of one player beyond that, maybe things could get a little tricky?
Well, since David Luiz was left and not replaced, they are a little bit short, I suppose, and they need John Terry to stay fit. If John Terry has one of his sort of injury-plagued seasons, they could have problems. But I think you could play Matic in there. He's physically imposing. Mikel, in an emergency, can play centre-back. So
I mean, this is kind of scraping the bottom. I mean, Didier Drogba could play there too. He's physically imposing as well. But there's a difference.
Sure,
in quickness and in approach, no?
I guess, but Mourinho looked at it, and Terry and Cahill played 50 games each last year. He's assuming they can do so again. And if they do, then he hasn't got a problem.
Yeah, but I agree with you, Gab. I think it is a problem.
Thank you.
Because I think Ivanovic isn't... I love Ivanovic, but...
Not as much as I do.
His best position is right back, and he's not that brilliant a defender. He doesn't want to play centre-back. So if you push him... If you push him there because one of Terry or Cahill get injured, you're losing what he does as a fullback, which is, you know, he's scoring or making goals every game at the moment. He's phenomenal going forward. Slightly iffy at Goodison defensively. I don't think just thinking, oh, automatically, well, we've got an automatic chap to slot into the back is that's not great news for Chelsea. He's not as effective as a centre-back.
Well, Dicko, what's your take on this? Because, I mean, this Chelsea team is built to win the Premier League and the Champions League. They spend a lot of money. They look like a complete side. Is that a potential concern?
A small one, but I think, you know, like you said, well, you said they're built to win the Premier League and the Champions League. I think just Mourinho's, his focus will be on reclaiming domestic prize first. I mean, I think the champion, as he always describes, you know, understandably, the Champions League brings a degree of lottery as a cup competition. You know, the margins are so fine in the knockout stages, and I just think he's absolutely intent on winning the Premier League this season. I think he thinks that he's got the pieces he needs for that, and looking at them, the way they've started, obviously the way that Costa has immediately made an impact in this league, then I think he's got every reason to be hopeful, confident of that. You know, no one is better at setting up a stable team structure than Mourinho. We know that. He's got options, attacking options as well, with Remy coming in. You go through all the boxes that he wants to tick, and he's got them all. And as you say, maybe if there's one area where they are slightly vulnerable, it's defensive cover if they lost someone like Terry for a sustained period. But, you know, that's an if that he'll have to deal with if it comes about.
And the thing with Mourinho, sorry to interrupt, is that while he will make changes and rotate, his back four is pretty much his back four. He likes that continuity. We saw last season, Nashiko was dropped, didn't get back. Azpilicueta played well. So if people are fit, you won't have a problem.
Bit of a philosophical thing. I mean, you guys all saw the incident. It was Seamus Coleman and Diego Costa. They were getting into it. Diego Costa got booked at one point. I think it was something after the goal. I think it was after Eden Hazard's goal, if memory serves. Diego Costa went and said something to Coleman. And Tim Howard, who is one of my favorite players and one of my favorite people in the Premier League, he runs out. He gets into his face. Then he goes to collect the ball. Then he runs out again after the referee, runs right past the referee. I was wondering there, who's rattling who? Because Howard's a veteran here. And what I saw, and I was watching a match of the day too last night, and they're like, oh, but I love the aggression from Costa there, just knows when to stop. Well, the dude did get booked, which means at some point he'll get suspended if he keeps getting bookings. And with Tim Howard as well, like, oh, you know, but he's sticking up for his teammates. Like, do you want your goalkeeper to be doing that?
But Howard's like that, isn't it? If you're in love with Howard, you know that's his. He loses it sometimes emotionally on the pitch.
And what you do know is that Mourinho, if Costa's winding other people up, Mourinho will be loving it. Is the fact that he's showing, you know, he wants. One of the reasons why I signed him, I mean, partly because he can play a lone striker in that system, but because he's pugnacious, he rattles other teams' defences, doesn't he? He gets about them, and that's, you know, that's the Mourinho template.
Right.
So it's, you know, you can see why I wasn't actually 100% convinced by Costa, not as a, you know, top of the A-list league, but you could certainly see why he was Mourinho's type of signing for, you know, not just for the way he sort of plays technically, but for his personality too.
Hughes, you're 3-1 up away from home. Do you need your star striker to get booked for getting into somebody's face?
No, you don't.
Exactly.
Which is why Mourinho blamed Coleman.
It's true that. One other thing, on the strikers, obviously there's a new striker coming in, and Fernando Torres finally leaving. I guess we won't have to ever talk about what's wrong with Torres unless he comes back, because it is a 2-year loan, bizarrely, my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Husey, is that it wasn't a permanent deal because Milan weren't going to pay him what Chelsea were paying him, and Chelsea couldn't agree on a price to give, or Torres wouldn't agree to Chelsea's offer of money for him to just go away.
I think it was also an element of Chelsea wanting him to remain on their books for FFP purposes instead of being seen to write off an asset.
Oh, in terms of amortization and all that good stuff. Is that what they said?
Yeah, apparently.
Wow. Everybody's sort of depicting this as some kind of tremendous deal because obviously Loic Remy had a release clause and he was linked to Liverpool. There's the mystery of the, supposedly he failed the medical. Now everything's fine. Arsenal didn't sign him, who might have been able to use him. Do we have any explanation for this?
Well, the only explanation I've heard, I'm not 100% sure about it, but
because people in football lie to us all the time.
Well, incredibly they do, but there's a suggestion that medical, well, it did take place in the States on Liverpool's pre-season tour, and the suggestion was that in America, for some reason, the medicals are more sophisticated and stringent than would be the case over here.
Well, I'm sorry. Are you suggesting to me that instead of having their own people look at them, they found some doctor in the yellow pages in the U.S. and said, "Hey, you conduct a medical."
Well, I'm sure they didn't look in the yellow pages.
No, okay, fine, but wouldn't you, if you're going to buy a £9 million asset and give him a multi-year contract, what you can't afford a couple £1,000 to fly your own medical doctor over, your own club doctor? You're going to go and to some other Burke who you don't know?
Well, they have doctors all over the place, don't they?
I realise that, but not all doctors are created equal, right?
No, I mean, the clubs have their own doctors.
QPR, they think they were maybe looking for an excuse to get out, you know, that they're okay, maybe something came up, but it wasn't a deal breaker that actually, whether they got the wind of the Balotelli possibilities at about the same time, but that, you know, it was, yeah, they were interested in Remy, but, you know, not so interested that they were going to do the deal come what may, and then, you know, this threw up a snag, and it was, they bailed out then, but they bailed out knowing that another option was about to appear.
Well, QPR got lucky in a way because Redknapp, I was at QPR on Saturday, and Redknapp was a bit cross about the whole leaked medical report. And he says there should be rules that if a player goes for a medical, what happens should be kept private. And it is a bit off to announce or to let it be known that the deal's fallen through for medical reasons, because then your asset could potentially become untransferable or the value dip. And there's a question mark over the player, but he's lucky that, you know, Harry Redknapp and the club are lucky that two clubs still decided to go with him. But it is an issue how much should be allowed to be known about a medical. I think
one final thing on this, I was curious to see when Chelsea went and played, especially away from home against a team that kept the ball more, whether he would keep Fabregas in the position that he played for the first two games, and he obviously tweaked it by putting Ramirez in there as well, a little more defensive oomph. This is going to be par for the course going forward, isn't it, Husey?
I'd have thought so, but the good thing is he has got so many options in midfield. I mean, even the front three, Willian, Hazard, Oscar, they can all play anywhere, really. Ramirez can play in there, Fabregas can play in four positions. So going forward, they do look pretty formidable. I'm not sure Loic Remy's going to get many games.
That said, though, the most handsome player at Chelsea is now gone.
Nando, you're funny?
No, Craig, no. Come on, who's the Justin Bieber of Chelsea? Am I the only person in the world who remembers Marco van Ginkel?
He's not a poster boy for me, put it that way. I've never fancied him.
Townsend, involved in the thick of the action straight away. And he's lost the ball. Moreno doing a really good job. And striding forward with real intent, Alberto Moreno! Oh, what a finish! It's a quite brilliant goal from Alberto Moreno. His first for Liverpool. It's 3-0.
Moving on to North London and White Hart Lane, where Liverpool roll to a 3-0 win over Spurs in Mario Balotelli's debut. Before we get to Liverpool, because we're often accused of being a little bit too Liverpool-heavy, I want to chuck this to you, Dicko. Is this Tottenham kind of crashing back to earth after the muted excitement? Is this their dimension?
Well, I think they can be better than this, clearly. And to be honest, I was arguing last season that for all the sort of wailing about the quality of the transfers that the nine players, whatever, they'd brought in to replace one Gareth Bale, that there was a lot more in their squad than was being seen on the pitch. Simple as that. And that, you know, all it took was some good management, some good coaching, and that it wasn't going to be easy to get back in the top four, that's for sure, because I think the quality around them improved. But they were colossally underperforming. We saw in one afternoon a colossal underperformance yesterday, but I think, you know, Spurs are better than this, and I think let's at least give Pochettino a bit of time. I mean, it's, you know, he's not been there very long, and I'm not going to judge him on one shockingly bad afternoon, but I think in Kabul and Vertonghen, you should have certainly better defenders than we saw yesterday. I think they've actually got, well, go through the squad, and I think they've got decent options in most places. I would like to see another top class striker personally, but I think we should see people like Lamella come through stronger this season. He's making a couple of bold decisions. Townsend, I think, is going to be on his way. So there's still a bit of tweaking to be done, but I think, you know, Spurs, a well-run, well-managed Spurs side should be a comfortable fifth and sixth and pushing for fourth.
Were Spurs that bad, or were actually Liverpool that good? Because going forward, Tuesday, they looked really, really impressive to me, especially in the first half.
They did look very good. I thought Sterling was outstanding, and my main thought watching it was that Roy Hodgson has got to find a way to play him in the middle of the pitch. If he can play it out for Liverpool and dominate against a good team, then surely that's where he should be playing for England, which obviously would have implications for the new captain.
A diamond for England.
Because that's where he wants to play. But, I mean, look, Rodgers, great credit to him. He goes to White Hart Lane. Tottenham have won the first two games. They're an air of positivity about the place. He plays two strikers and Sterling behind. Very, very bold attacking formation, and it worked. So as average as Tottenham were, Liverpool's pace and penetration was fantastic. So they deserve huge credit, really.
You can see, I mean, on that, there is an England formation that can work from that, isn't it? Because the fact is that you can play Rooney and Sturridge higher up and Sterling behind him, and then three across. I mean, that was the big debate that came out of the World Cup, wasn't it? Should we have played three actually at the base of midfield, where we're continually overrun? So there is, I mean, you might be struggling to find that three at the base, but there's no reason why Sterling can't rove behind Rooney and Sturridge in a Liverpool-style formation.
You saw yesterday, Balotelli didn't have the greatest game, but it's rare these days to see genuinely two strikers playing up front in the Premier League, and it caused huge, huge problems for Tottenham. I mean, Balotelli missed chances, but he was there and he was a handful. It shows that playing two strikers can pay off.
And Henderson had a good game as well. So you got your first of those three. For
okay, now this is too much England talk here. Okay, that's enough.
But I'm trying. It's a massive week for England.
It's not. Away. Nobody cares.
huge England.
We're going to have to talk about England next week,
yes,
and
yes,
the 10 people.
Pay me to try and sell some tickets.
Buy some tickets. Take your family, Gab. Everyone should be there.
There's about 50,000 still going if you want them, folks. Queue up.
Alison, Husey didn't seem to be too impressed with Balotelli. Now I was watching on television, and I was watching on Sky actually, and I heard both Niall Quinn and Paul Scholes rave about him. And I want to know, because is the glass half full or half empty? Because he should have had a hat-trick. He could have had a hat-trick with the header he missed, the header he hit at the goalkeeper, and and that weirdo shot that, you know,
to the open goal. Yeah.
Exactly. from about 50 yards out, but still. But then he did a lot of, he worked hard. He held the ball up. He nearly got decapitated by Eric Dier and didn't go and lose his rag. You're a Liverpool fan. I think we can out you. Were you impressed?
With Balotelli? Yeah, no.
Is it half full or half empty?
I suspect it's going to shift through the season, but
this performance.
On that evidence, it was half full. I like players who work hard. He didn't swan in with a, ooh, look at my reputation, emblazoned on the back of his shirt. He grafted a bit, and things didn't go for him. And the misses were slightly embarrassing, but he didn't pout or strut or do the things that people think Balotelli's going to do. So I think as a debut for a new club go, it was more than acceptable.
Tico, I'm slightly concerned. While we all have a lot of faith in Brendan Rodgers and everybody's written about the reclamation projects with Sturridge and Suarez, it seems that like every time he talks about him now, he always goes back to the same theme about how, you know, this is a team and Mario has to adapt and blah, blah, blah. And I don't know if it's because y'all in the media keep asking him the same questions over and over again. But even coming out when he talked after the game about marking on set pieces, and, yep. Mario told me, like, I don't mark on set pieces. And so I said, no, you do now. And he did, and it was great. And apart from the fact that he has marked on set pieces before, I know this for a fact. But is it really wise to keep going back to this, or should he just kind of just talk about the player from now on rather than, you know, until he does something silly?
Well, it's the Rodgers way, isn't it? I mean, we were all at that speech, weren't we, in May when Suarez won the Football of the Year award, and Rodgers made this incredibly heartfelt, and I don't doubt sincere speech at the time about, you know, Suarez, not just the footballer but the man, and how working, I think the phrase was something like working with Suarez every day had made Rodgers a better person, and you know, it felt incredibly a bit over the top, I guess, but you know, he's talking about Balotelli the same way, and I think that's how Rodgers sees his job. Some people may chuckle and scoff and say, yeah, well, and Suarez went out and bit someone 3 weeks later, but I think he might sound a bit highfalutin, but he thinks that his job is about, you know, educating people as well as educating footballers, and he thinks that part of his gift as a coach is improving people that way, and he thinks, maybe flatters himself, as we'll find out, that he can do that for Mario Balotelli, and that's obviously part of the fascination, is not that just that he thinks that he can get Mario Balotelli playing decent football, he thinks he can make Mario Balotelli, you know, a better human being, and that's, say, we may have a chuckle about that a couple of months down the line, but that's the way Rodgers sees the world.
Matt, thanks for raising that, because time stood still for me when Rodgers was interviewed, when the transfer of Balotelli had been confirmed, and he said on air, into camera, I looked into Balotelli's eyes and I, Brendan Rodgers, know I can make him a better human being. I'm kind of gobsmacked that he's got away with that. I don't see that as the role of a manager.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
At all. You deal with players as players and part of your team. If the BBC wanted to poach me, and then I overheard the head of the BBC saying to someone, "I think I can make Alison Rudd a better human being," I wouldn't go. That is not the role of my employer at all. And
it also implies that he's judging
you, right? I think it's deeply patronising. It comes with lots of suppositions that this is a player who is somehow not a rounded human being. I mean, he's a grown man with an interesting backstory. You do not write him off as a personality by saying you can improve him. I actually found it quite offensive.
Well, I mentioned the Suarez sort of speech and how that turned that blew up, shall we say. And you know, I think a few of us sort of look back on that speech. You know, as I say, it felt over the top at the time, and sort of sniggered a little bit at how it had turned out. So soon that Suarez had gone back to binding people. I slightly disagree. The fact is that the best leaders I've worked for do inspire you as people. You know, they don't just make me hopefully a better journalist, but they inspire you. So I'm not saying that Balotelli's going to have his personality transformed, but certainly the best leaders. It's not just Rogers. Alex Ferguson would say the same. He wants to work with good people, and then he wants to shape good people. You know, Alex Ferguson's autobiography is full of talk about how, you know, he takes young men, and that's why he was so intent on bringing youth through. He wants to shape young men, and I take your point, Alison. It's not about transforming personalities, and least of all as sort of what should be grown men, but I think that's part of management and part of leadership across, not just in football.
Hughesy, I'm going to give you the final word on this one, because, you know, we all have stereotypes and images, and my stereotype of the part of the world that you come from is the coldest, most unemotional, most no-nonsense part of
the whole world. quite a claim. We'll take it.
Certainly of a generally cold, sterile, and unemotional country like England, you guys are sort of the epitome of it. What's your take on this? Because I didn't see your eyes roll when I said that, but I could imagine them, you know, rolling metaphorically inside your head. We were talking to our boss earlier before coming in, sucking up as a good employee does. I mean, you saw Allison's response. If he said, when you joined this institution, did he talk about what you're like as a person and how he's going to improve you as a person, or did he just talk about what you can bring and what the paper can give you and so on? I mean, would that have upset you if he said, like, you know, I can make you a better person than you are?
I think I may have found it slightly patronising, but I probably lean towards Matt's interpretation that it is part of his job. But the thing with Rodgers is he probably advertises it and promotes his own healing powers rather too much. I think he's right to be taking a holistic view of his players, to borrow a word from Manchester City, but he doesn't need to go on TV and say he's going to transform them as individuals. And that Rodgers, he's a great storyteller, a great raconteur, a great self-promoter. Sometimes he goes a bit too far.
All right, let's talk now third-party ownership. It's our debate this week. For those who don't know the concept, here's a brief capsule. Third-party ownership is when an entity, usually a fund from outside football, finances the acquisition of a player. So in other words, Alisson wants to buy Matt, so Dicko lends Alisson £10 million to purchase Matt Hughes, and then when he sold, the proceeds from the sale, as well as the original capital, goes to Dicko. But very broadly speaking, that's how it works, and obviously if you finance half the deal, then you get half the player and so on. Now, it's not illegal by FIFA standards. What is illegal is third-party influence, which means that if you finance a deal, you can't also go and determine where a player goes. In some European countries, such as this one, England, it is entirely legal. There is no third-party ownership for players who are actually in the Premier League. There's nothing stopping you from going and buying somebody who's third-party owned, as happened this summer with the likes of Marcos Rojo and Eliakim Mangala and others. Dicko, I want to start with you because one of the biggest funds engaging in third-party ownership is based right here in London. It's called Doyen. And you spent some time with them, and and their, I guess he's their chief executive, Nelio Lucas. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, with Diane, it's interesting because even though they're doing something, as you say, that's totally legal under FIFA rules and stuff, they're still incredibly twitchy about how they're seen. Diane were desperate not to be seen like a lot of other third-party funds where there are potential conflicts of interest, where you have, shall we say, an agent who owns, who is part of a company that owns a stake in a player and represents that player. Now, if anyone can't see the potential conflict of interest there, where, you know, it's clearly in the agent's interest at certain times to move on the player, then, you know, they need their eyes checking. And Doyen were very keen to be seen to be running a slightly different model. Now, that's a model that has been drawn into controversy on the Rojo deal to Manchester United, because Doyen are being accused of exactly what they say they don't do, which is, as you said, third-party influence. And that will be decided, as it seems, by, potentially through the courts in Portugal. So we'll see how that one transpires. But, I mean, just to simplify it, my view, and I'm very glad, is that the Premier League don't allow it. It's because I think there is always the possibility of undue influence. The model is brings that possibility, however you sort of cleanly you try and keep it, however sort of hands off the investors claim to be. I would prefer that it doesn't exist, and I'm glad that the Premier League don't allow it. And I don't think certainly in a league like England, where there's the broadcast income that we have, there is no need for it here. And I think the Premier League sort of introduced that rule slightly out of embarrassment because of what had happened with the Tevez deal. It was brought about by that screw up. But the fact is that I'm glad that rule exists here. Now, equally, I can see why it thrives in countries like Brazil and Portugal, where there is, shall we say, clubs being more hand to mouth. I'm told that when we were over in Brazil at the World Cup, talking to the head of youth at Fluminense, and he said it's basically, if you get a talented teenager, it is very common for the parents to be given, 20-30% of the economic rights of a player. Now, clearly, that again brings its own potentially dangerous influence, because the parents have then got huge financial incentive about where their son goes, and rather than maybe judging the deal on what's best for his career, they judge it on how much money they can make. So that's why I say I would like the practice outlawed worldwide, but that ain't going to happen.
Matt, it was in May, I think, you wrote your piece about Doyen, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it was to preview the Champions League final. And I got the impression you were saying Atletico could not possibly compete without the help of a hedge fund. And this was a positive thing.
No, I think, but I'm talking about a sort of utopian world where football finances are set up in a way that it is not necessary. And sadly, that utopian world does not exist in some leagues and some clubs out there. I mean, the fact is that Atletico could not have competed in the way they did, got the Champions League final and won La Liga last season, without bringing in all kinds of external funding, whether that was from hedge funds for third-party players, whether that was bank loans, there was even down to the chief executive mortgaging his own house. So, they had, shall we say, a pretty complicated and unstable financial structure. In an ideal world, that club would be far more stable and would not need third-party ownership.
Well, to be fair to Atletico, the reason they needed to do this isn't because there's some tiny, plucky underdog. They are the third biggest club in Spain. It's because they spent so much money and accumulated so much debt over the years that they have been teetering on the verge of bankruptcy forever. And since banks won't lend them money, they have to go turn to third-party investors. It seems to me that, we mentioned obviously this is absolutely rampant in Portugal. The nice thing about Portugal is that, unlike England, you've got clubs that are listed on the stock exchange and they have total transparency. One of the most fun days of the year for me is when, and it's going to make me seem incredibly sad, but it's when Porto and Benfica released their annual report.
Is and that the red circle in the calendar?
It really is. It's a red letter day.
Your wife takes the kids away.
Exactly. No, but it's the one where they're like, we own 18.3% of Luisão and we sold 6.1% of Luisão to Alison Rudd for 18.1. I mean, it's ridiculous. If there is total transparency, But, you know, when you don't know who's behind it, obviously there's a whole number of issues. You don't know the relationships between them and managers and decision makers. But if there was a way to make this all transparent, maybe even more transparency than you currently have in Portugal, why, and perhaps also have a limit on the percentage that can be owned by any one entity of a player, why is this such a bad thing?
Well, for the scope for undue influence that's already been outlined, and also sort of wider, I guess, moral view, that to me it just seems to be a vehicle for making a lot of money, right, for businessmen, shareholders, whatever, by exploiting the talents of
What does Stan Kroenke do? What do the Glazers do? You have an ethical problem with people investing in the game to make a lot of money?
Yeah, because they don't.
What does Sky do?
They don't sell themselves. As far as I'm aware, Stan Kroenke doesn't actually own any slaves or, you know,
but these people
have an army of chattels following him around.
These people aren't.
It's a unique situation when you sell your economic rights to someone else.
But the economic rights, it's not as if the economic rights belong to the player. They belong to the club, right? You're not buying the economic rights from the player. You're buying the economic rights from the club that holds the player's registration.
Sure, but if you're a 14-year-old from wherever.
If you're a 14-year-old boy, you're not a professional, and you can't be bought and sold anyway. It's illegal.
Okay,
but we're talking about professional. Marcos Rojo is not a 14-year-old boy. Although he's sort of boyish.
But now he can't play any football because...
No, but in Brazil, they do, I mean, say the guy said that, you know, this sort of apportioning of, or, you know, you've got a teenager coming through, and, you know, say for the best teenagers at a young age, you know, they'll already be down to negotiations of, you know, say the parents, here's 30%, some outside investor, right. Rich outside investor, we could probably name a few, you know, here's 50%, here's, you know, and you cannot tell me that is a model. I mean, it's a model for potentially making an awful lot of money, and, you know, if people, as you say, there is a lot of money to be made out of football. In all sorts of different ways, and it's dangerous sort of moralizing between one way of doing it and the other. But the fact is, are the best decisions being made for that footballer's career? Now, sometimes yes, undoubtedly sometimes no, and that's why I say I would prefer that the system did not exist, because, you know, for as many cases where that transaction would happen anyway and just different people are making money, there must be cases where bad decisions are being made, you know, purely for the money's sake, or where there is coercion going on to a certain player to move from X to Y because the investors are demanding their return at that particular time, or because an agent, as I say, has got, you know, who knows what an agent is telling a player about his options, if that agent is not only, you know, got money to be made from the deal, but is actually an investor in the economic rights.
Well, I always think it's a bit interesting when people talk about this, when you've got clubs who only do business with certain agents, and we know who those clubs are and who those managers are.
I mean, there are all sorts of ways.
So, you know, it just seems to me it is one example of it. But I wanted to throw this out there because Michel Platini feels very strongly about this, and he shares your view, Dico. He's entirely against this, and he wanted to ban it in Europe, and then he found out that he couldn't because transfers are FIFA matters, and what FIFA do is sort of they open another committee to look at it every 6 months. But, you know, obviously they represent the world game in some parts of the world, so entrenched it's not going to happen. He's looking at either regulating it somehow or perhaps trying to ban it from European competitions. But again, that's very difficult. Hassan, is this all bad? I mean, or is there a way that we can regulate it with transparency, with limits on the amount that somebody can own, perhaps maybe by putting it in a blind trust, or should we just not go there and just
I think it is codifiable, and if you are transparent, this could be a workable system. I would, to counter Matt's indignation, I would say it's potentially democratizing, because you allow clubs who couldn't perhaps otherwise progress in the market financially to be able to do that, so it opens up competition, and I'd have thought Platini would like that, because he's always trying to make the smaller clubs have some sort of power and voice in world football, and this gives them an opportunity. And also I think we are applying emotion to it. I mean, the indignation that's coming through, we were saying similar things 20 years ago about agents and their increasing influence, and whether they would advise a young player simply because they wanted to line their own pockets and not think at all about whether the club suited the player or the geographical location suited the player. football has changed, and rather than just say, oh, it's horrible, it sounds horrible, it makes them sound like slaves, why not accept that this does help certain clubs and certain individuals and just codify it and make it more transparent?
It may do that, but it doesn't help them for very long, does it? I mean, Porto are the great example. They get all these players in and they're part of them, but every couple of years they sell them all to Europe, vast profits, and the cycle just sort of repeats itself. A lot of that money is going out of football, and Porto are no better than they were 5 or 10 years ago.
Except they keep winning league titles and advancing in the Champions League and stuff like that.
Well, they haven't won the Portugal title since Mourinho was there, which was a freak.
In the real world, we ain't going to get rid of this because it is so inherent in certain parts of the world. That's, you know, Platini rails against it, but he's not really actually doing very much to get rid of it, and apart from sort of blaming FIFA. I mean, occasionally he says UEFA will take unilateral action, but I just don't see it because it is so inherent. And I say, look, if it was to be abolished, there would have to be a practical alternative because, you know, as you say, I mean, they're going to have to be some funding. I mean, there's going to have to be, whether it's from banks. Banks won't lend money to football clubs for fairly obvious reasons. So it's not. It wouldn't be easy just to click your fingers and ban third party because it's so inherent in Portugal, Brazil, and other places.
All right, now the part of the show that is statistically, as our research shows, everybody's favorite: quick hits. Now, you're going to hear side effects because we've had complaints about certain people, James Ducker, rattling on far too long, and then our ratings go down. And most of all, our very efficient producer, Dave McGuire, doesn't like it. So, after 20 seconds, you will hear this noise, which is an invitation to wrap up. And then once you hit 25 seconds, you will be hearing this. And at that point, you must stop talking.
And after 4 minutes, you hear, James, shut up.
Arsenal are held at Leicester City as Lauren Koscielny gets an almighty knock to the head. Alisson, why are they not clicking as they should? Is it just the absence of Olivier Giroud?
Well, that's part of it, because I think they're not clicking because Arsenal, they look physically tired about the fact that they're never at full strength. They relentlessly have injury issues, and there's always a player about to come back to change it, and I think that's quite sapping in terms of morale. So Walcott, of course he'll improve the team, which means if he's not there, you struggle.
Manchester City fall at Stoke 1-0. Dicko, reason to be concerned, or just a blip, as Manuel Pellegrini suggests?
Well, probably just a blip, but I mean, they've got concern just because I don't think that week to week they're going to match Chelsea's intensity this season. I think that Mourinho, as we mentioned earlier, is absolutely dead set on winning this league, and Pellegrini has to make sure his players are absolutely at full tilt every week. And he's got a couple of decisions to make as well, not least about whether he sticks with Joe Hart. So I think City are going to come second this season.
Some slightly dubious defending there as well, in my opinion. Speaking of Stoke, some were skeptical when Mark Hughes said he'd play more attractive football. Others were even more skeptical when they saw his signings last year. Yes, I'm looking at you, Matt. Has he gone up in your estimation? You were rather negative about Stoke's chances this coming season, or last season. Can you name me a better manager from this sceptred isle?
Well, Brendan Rodgers.
He's not. He's Irish. Doesn't count. That's not
Mark
sceptred
Hughes
isle.
Is Welsh. They're both British. Anyway.
It's a different island. He's from a different island.
Point being, I think Mark Hughes is a good manager. He had ideas with his station a few years ago when he thought he was going to manage Chelsea, and he messed Fulham around, but at a medium Premier League club like Stoke, Blackburn, he's doing a good job, so I'm not that surprised, no.
Swansea are off to their best start in 91 years. Alisson, you were a fan of Michael Laudrup, as I recall. Has Monk made you reevaluate a thing or two?
Only a fool would reevaluate Michael Laudrup. He took Swansea into Europe. Great manager. What Monk has done is the right thing, which is taken the good things of the Laudrup regime and added a bit of graft on the training ground. The players were not always happy with the way Laudrup took training, and Monk's modified that and made them a good team.
Manchester United are held again, this time at Barnsley. Dicko, will everything, including the three-man defence, be fine once Di Maria, Rojo, Blin, Shaw and Herrera, and at this stage, I think we can add Radamel Falcao, are all on the pitch at the same time?
Oh, blimey, who knows? I mean, it's that's pretty much an entire team you're talking about changing. Does he even have the... I wouldn't play the three-man defence for starters. I would play, well, I'm not sure what I'm playing now. I've got Falcao to fit in with Rooney and Van Persie and Mata and Di Maria. I need to sit down, as does Van Gaal, and stare at a wall and work out what on earth he's doing with a sort of squad that's been bought in a big panic shop.
Yeah, all those guys to fit in, but no Chicharito Hernandez to fit in because he's going on loan to Real Madrid. Crystal Palace draw 3-3 with Newcastle, and their new boss positively glows. He also happens to be their old boss, Neil Warnock. Matt, the right choice? Would you have him at Huddersfield?
He actually turned the job down 10 days ago, and now we know why.
At Huddersfield?
Yeah. And now we know why, because he was lining up a move to Crystal Palace. Is he the right choice? In the circumstances, he's probably as good as they were going to get, and he's certainly better than the alternative, which was to appoint Malky Mackay and then kind of be exposed to a whole tsunami of trouble when that story would eventually come out. So it's pragmatic, it's not very exciting. Will they stay up? Probably not, but could have been worse.
Gab, question for you. Real Madrid were 2-0 up at one point against Real Sociedad. Surely Ancelotti didn't let that lead slip away, did he?
I can't think of any time he would have let a two, let alone three-goal lead slip away. No, Real Madrid were terrible. Ancelotti apologized for it. The bottom's falling out here, and it's amazing because they get their business done early in signing Toni Kroos and James Rodriguez, as well as Keylor Navas. And now they lose Di Maria, which they knew was coming. They don't necessarily replace him, but most of all, Xabi Alonso leaving, going to Bayern Munich. They've picked up Chicharito Hernandez on loan, another striker which he wanted. This squad seems totally unbalanced, and it's the age-old issue there. So that's all we've got time for this week. Many thanks to my excellent, entertaining, and informative guests today, Alison Rudd and the two Mats, Hughes and Dicko. Check out thetimes.co.uk. You know, members get exclusive football, rugby, and cricket highlights free. Cricket highlights as well? Is there such a thing? As part of your subscription. If you're not a member yet, take our £1 digital trial today. Just search Times Sport Online. If you go on the website, it tells you how many people have signed up. We're nearing 400,000, which I think is absolutely remarkable. Maybe by next week, we'll be well past that mark. Speaking of next week, that's where we'll be. Same place, same time, same bat channel. Till next time, bye-bye.
Your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times now comes with access to every Barclays Premier League goal. Refresh your app, choose your team, accept notification, and you're away.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.